This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert will be back with me tomorrow. Coming up, it's our Teach Me What You Know segment. Today, we'll learn how to winterize a house. Winter is coming. Well, it's already here. But our guest says it's not too late to save energy and money. First, a lot of cable TV shows have risen to dominate conversations and award shows over the years. The new Golden Globe and Screen Actors Guild nominations have lots of Breaking Bad and some Game of Thrones. That's the theme song we're listening to there. Our next guest sees parallels to these shows in an unexpected place, the novels of 1800s England. Caroline Levine is professor of English at UW-Madison. I talked to her a while back about these TV shows. Caroline Levine, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Rob.
Well, my question is, we've got an expert on Victorian culture and literature. Why the heck are you teaching classes and writing about Mad Men and The Wire and other TV shows?
Well, you know, there's a surprising similarity between the Victorian novel and contemporary television that I am really struck by as a Victorian lit scholar. They go through a kind of similar transformation. So the Victorian novel used to be considered trashy, addictive, bad for people's brains, bad for their sense of ethics. So exactly the way that TV has been treated by us in our culture, we think of it as low and degraded and popular and trashy. And then over the course of the 19th century, novelists started to experiment with really complex, multi-plot novel forms that wove together different characters to give a whole vision of society, and the novel started to be taken seriously. And that, I think, is what's happening with TV right now. So HBO gave a lot of room to directors and producers to think much more ambitiously about what TV could do. And DVD technology allowed us to watch something from the very beginning, even if we'd missed, you know, even if we heard about it in the middle, we can go back now and watch from the very beginning. And so they can weave together much more complicated plots that bring together different parts of society and allow us actually to think about the society that we live in really rich and deep ways. And so it's a lot like Dickens, for example, or George Eliot, to think about how whole societies work.
And I've heard shows like The Wire especially referred to as Dickensian, as how they weave together all those elements. I mean, is that a fair comparison, or do people overstate that?
You know, I'm one of the champions of that view. There are definitely people who disagree with it. but I see The Wire as really building on Dickens's project, which was to try to figure out how to see a whole social world as interconnected. How is it that I am linked, you know, I'm a professor in the university. How am I linked to somebody living in dire poverty in my own city, but somebody I'll never meet? And Dickens cared about that. And The Wire really tries to get us to see how that works.
We'll dig a little deeper into that. But I want to get back to this idea of the novel as like the trash of the day.
Yeah. Right?
It was really looked down on, huh?
Definitely. You were, if you had daughters, you were supposed to keep novels from them because it would turn them into, first of all, muddleheads, right? It would just be completely bad for their brains. But also, it would train you to think that there was this world of fantasy out there and that you should live in this world of fantasy. And so there was an argument that it was really bad for people. There were always a few novelists who kind of rose above the fray. And so one of the struggles in the novel in the early 19th century is between a sense of a really feminized world of novels. So there were more women writers of novels and more women readers of novels in the late 18th century. And then Walter Scott comes along and he kind of masculinizes the novel and dignifies the novel also for some people.
So when dudes came along and started writing the serious novels, then people started taking them seriously?
Kind of. I mean, there were definitely male writers of the novel in the 18th century too, but it's when people think of it as a feminine genre that it's really degraded and low. And so it's a bunch of really concerted efforts to say, no, this could be a more serious genre than you realize.
Well, is there an analogy in TV now, I wonder? Because, you know, is The Wire, The Sopranos, are those like guy things and we take them seriously? I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here.
That's a really great question. I think maybe there's not an analogy there. Although it's really true. You know, I actually have a kind of prejudice against shows that don't have strong women characters, but The Wire doesn't really. I mean, a couple along the way, but it's not centered around women. So it does in some ways feel like a kind of masculine show. But I think TV was never quite feminized that way. It was maybe, if anything, made people think about childishness, right? That TV was easy and it didn't challenge you rather than women.
So we're in a transformation period now where it used to be TV was, you know, popular for the masses, here today, gone tomorrow. And now more and more, if you want to have that serious conversation about our culture, it's not the latest book or even the latest movie. It's the TV shows.
I think we're, you know, there are a lot of people who would disagree with me, but I think we're in a golden age of television as art. I think what film can't do what television can do because it just doesn't have enough time. So if you really want to try to think about complicated interrelations between people, you're better off working in TV. And now TV is taking itself seriously. It's giving room to that kind of real thoughtfulness. So the novel is still doing that. And the novel is still, I think, a really important and popular form. But I'm pretty sure we're going to look back on this moment and say, wow, TV was extraordinary then.
Is part of the deal with these shows coming up that there are so many different networks and so many opportunities to experiment, whereas back in the day when you had three and then four broadcast networks and maybe public television, there wasn't room for that? They had to have this wide, lowest common denominator feel?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I in some ways I'm sad for the loss of the common culture that we had through networks and for the sense, you know, that news channels were not competing in the same ways that they are now, using kind of, you know, cheap marketing tactics to get people to watch and that kind of thing. So it's sad for me to say yes to that question. But in some ways, it's true. HBO, I think, was really smart and savvy, but also thoughtful about allowing television to expand its usual array of themes and problems to things that were disturbing, that were graphic, that were sexual, all kinds of things that, you know, you actually really can't show on the networks. And there's a good reason why you can't. And so you do actually need cable channels to make that happen.
We've kind of lost that common conversation we had, you know, back in the day. I remember everybody saw that last episode of MASH. Not everybody, of course, but there were things that such a huge portion of the population saw. It really dominated the conversation for a while. We're never going to see that again, are we?
No, right. And especially the way that culture is delivered to us, which is often, you know, Netflix or on DVD, right? We don't have that synchronous timing where the water cooler the next morning, everybody gathers and talks about the same thing. But, you know, the flip side and the good side of that is a lot of diversification. There's more options for people. And, you know, I think the long extended plot is made possible also by these new technologies. And that, as I was saying before, is something really valuable for us.
Now, some of the shows we've mentioned, The Wire has come up, and there are shows like Mad Men, The Sopranos, lots of others. They're really exciting to people in my circles, in the media, in academia. Is there sort of an elitism here or a snob appeal and it's not going to the rest of the culture?
Yeah. To some extent, I think that's true. This is high art television, so it actually isn't for everybody. I have a couple of friends who are TV scholars, and I thought I was going to get, you know, some credibility from them because I was writing about The Wire, and they said, oh, highbrow television, right? So I do think TV's ideas of itself and its markets and its ways of conceiving itself is kind of splitting into different demographics, and that this is highbrow television. But like a lot of art forms, that doesn't mean it necessarily leaves other people out. So it can be challenging, difficult, interesting, and rich without being exclusive.
Mm-hmm. It's not highbrow. It's just longer and more convoluted.
Right. Right. So you have to have a willingness to commit to it, to watch it through.
So The Wire, you've talked about some. Can you leave us with a couple other shows that really sum up what we're talking about that are reinventing the early days of the Victorian novel in our time?
Sure. So I like to think of – I know for a lot of people both The Sopranos and Breaking Bad have been groundbreaking, and I certainly would love to give them credit. But for me, the three that kind of sum up the different directions that television could take in these rich new ways are The Wire, Mad Men, and Game of Thrones. Because there are all these different genres, and in each genre, television is expanding how we think. It's complex, it's rich, it's resonant, but it shows us this huge range of possibility that's out there.
Caroline Levine, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for letting me be here.
That was Caroline Levine, UW professor of English.